Hello, this is the Sleepover Podcast. I am Carolyn Lovewell.
And I am Layla Matthews.
And we are live at Layla's kitchen table. And we wanted to talk to you today. Stuff has been happening in the world. As per usual, things are pretty crazy. Humans are killing other humans en masse. Humans are persisting in believing that other humans are evil and have to be eliminated. Climate change is going pretty strong. Like here in Pittsburgh, it's chilly today, but we've also had a full-on balmy springtime in the middle of February, which isn't normal.
Yes.
Historically. Anyways, and you know, anyways, the apocalypse is going along nicely. So we wanted to keep talking about that, our favorite subject, and Layla was saying that she had been enjoying some thoughts about the email that I wrote today, that I sent out about Babylon in the Book of Revelations, and how, you know, like, she, to my mind, like, the symbol of this great harlot riding a seven-headed beast who's, like, who's Pan, basically, like, Pan, the beast, the all.
The everything.
The seven spheres, the seven archons, the seven, you know, prismatic flavors of existence.
It's just the monstrousness of reality.
Yeah.
Just the heaving, fucking, terrible, devouring truth of material reality.
She's riding it. She's in union with it. She's so happy about it. She's intoxicated. She's, like, orgasmic. She has this giant holy grail filled with the wine of her fornications and the blood of the martyrs of Jesus and the blood of Jesus.
It's honestly the most inspiring religious icon image. I don't know what the right word is. It truly inspires me. Like, when I really, like, behold it in my mind, I'm like, yes, that's correct.
And even John of Patmos, who was like, this is horrible, that's like, who saw Babylon as this, like, scary representative of Babylon, which had enslaved the Jews, and John of Patmos himself was a Jewish Christian, and so he saw, you know, the metaphor of the Jews enslaved in Babylon was for him parallel to the Christians being oppressed by the Roman Empire. And so Babylon represented basically all of the values of empire that to this day everybody is lamenting quite a lot, the horrible, awful horrors of imperialism. So John of Patmos saw Babylon as that. And I mean, Babylon was sort of like his figurative name, right, for the lady looked like Ishtar, right? Like,
right.
Ishtar, the goddess of love and war. Anyway, so there she is, she's riding the great beast, and even he, who was like, she's a bad guy, right, was like, and I wondered with a great admiration.
Right, exactly, like, wow.
How could you not? Like, whoa.
Something's being transmitted to me. And I was just really taken by, you know, the line in your email, Carolyn, where you were like, and from the point of view of, you know, John the ascetic, this, like, sexy babe, it looks like bad news. And I was just really appreciating how I just can't agree with him.
I can't see it that way.
I can't see it that way. I really can't. I am very turned on by the idea of, like, lovingly apprehending the all, including its yuckiness.
Well, I feel like even in the text, though, I mean, I feel like there's textual clues that she is identical with the Virgin Mary. In
right.
The sense of, like, there's another woman who appears in the Book of Revelation a few chapters before Babylon, and it's this woman who's pregnant, and, you know, she's crowned with the sun and stars and girt with the zodiac. She's obviously, like, the mother of all, the mother of heavens.
Mm-hmm.
And she's pregnant and she's being persecuted by a great beast who's chasing her and she's having to hide. So there's that pregnant great goddess lady. And then there's Babylon. And Babylon is holding a grail filled with the blood of Jesus. What could a grail filled with the blood of Jesus and the martyrs of Jesus be but the womb of the virgin who gives birth right. to the Savior? So how, like, and what, so it's like, she clearly is that womb. Like, she clearly, to me, like, she is the matrix of Christ consciousness embodied in right. living matter and form. And, you know, the she is the precondition of manifestations like Jesus of Nazareth. Her just incredibly slutty compassion. And let's just think
incredibly
also,
slutty compassion. Yes.
Incredibly slutty compassion. And she is understanding, right? Like in the vision and the voice, Crowley yeah. sees her and he's like, she's understanding, which is Bina on the Tree of Life. And what else is there? There's that... She, well, the Virgin Mary was like, she was like 13 or something, and she was betrothed to Joseph, and an angel came and was like, look, you're gonna get knocked up by the Holy Spirit. It's all cool. Just roll with it. Your husband-to-be is going to know that you're a no-good, trashy slut. So right. will everybody around you.
Right.
Everybody will realize that you are pregnant and you are not supposed to be pregnant because you haven't been married yet. And
oopsie, that's so, a bad look.
So a slutty young teenage child bride essentially is the mother of Christ.
Right.
Any way you slice it.
It rhymes. It rhymes.
It's just like, and she was rhymes. Like, yes, I am down for that. Let's go. Let's do it. Cool. Okay. She was down for it.
She was a real slut. She
signed up.
Yeah, well, I do just think that the rhyme of slutty compassion is a liberating philosophy to have, because a lot of us imagine ourselves to be compassionate people, but in a rather prudish kind of way that is only reserved for like decent good people.
The deserving
that deserve that deserve compassion. And then there are other people who just aren't good enough to receive our compassion. And I think that goes like largely unquestioned and completely unconscious in most people's minds. And you do have to become a real fucking slut to be willing to like open your heart to having compassion for even people that you don't agree with. And even people that you think are maniacal. And yeah.
It always reminds me. I had this dear friend in grad school. And one day I did something that offended her. And we, you know, we made up. And we had a little, you know, reconciliation. She was like, oh, for a minute there, I was really worried that you were a bad person. And I was like, I'm a person. I was like, I didn't realize we had to split everything. Categories,
right.
Good people and bad people. I mean, and there are folks, there's tons of people who go around with seeing the world through that lens. And it's just like, it's never made any sense to me. I mean, and thank God for the 12-step rooms, because I feel like those are places where one can really learn actual, really get religion.
Truly grok what is meant by compassion and love mm-hmm. and forgiveness.
Yeah. And anyways, so I've never been able to, like, my mind has just, like, never operated in those terms. And my mind is also never, I also really love that Babylon is a whore. And Babylon is, like, you know, selling herself. And she's triumphant. And she's not, I've been thinking about this a lot ever since I've sent it out to my email list, the Formscapes video, which I cannot remember the name of, but it's something about the divine womb, I think, in the title, where he's talking about the will to domination, the will to escape, and the will to numinosity. Mm-hmm. And he talks about it in such a way that's very smart, but really just privileges the will to numinosity. But as the more I thought about it, the more I was like, you cannot have the will to numinosity without the will to power and the will to escape also. They are... all on the Tree of Life, that
right.
the will to escape is the pillar of mercy, the will to dominate is the pillar of severity, and the will to numinosity is the middle pillar. And so that middle pillar doesn't really exist without those two other wills.
Right. Yeah. The central pillar is like an interference field created by the other poles.
Yeah. So exactly. So you have to, so I can just really feel the way in which, like, I said some spicy things on Instagram yesterday and people got offended with me, and plus I was doing it in the context of marketing because I'm a disgusting whore, and I try to tell people this all the time and they just don't listen. They act surprised. I'm like, clearly you don't know me.
You haven't been paying attention.
They're like, oh, I loved you, Carolyn. I just didn't know you were so tasteless and disgusting. So
I loved you until you tried to sell me something that I might like. How dare you?
In the context of talking about something deep and important, how could you do that?
How? I thought you were different.
I'm not. I'm not different. I'm a fucking whore, like everybody else on Instagram, by the way. So, I'm just like other girls, okay? And I have a will to dominate and a will to escape. And that is part of what makes my my middle pillar will to numinosity is a giant astral cock vulva. It's huge. It's fucking huge. I can't even begin to explain it to you and how well it works and how much happiness and money it generates. And it...
Carolyn, I've never heard you explain yourself more clearly. I'm actually jealous because I wish I had fully been able to describe you in this way. Because it is true, Carolyn. Your will to domination is strong. And so is your will to escape. Like, the amount of times that you text me being like, Layla, if I figure out how to spin these tetrahedrons in my mind, I'm going to figure out how to teleport. I'm going to do it. Like, you, your, like, desire for the, like, highest knowledge of transcendent realms is, like, so pure and beautiful and strong. And also, like, you were just showing me the listing for the castle that your husband wants to buy. And we were seriously considering what it would be like if we lived in a giant Sicilian castle. And it is true that those two things come together and make you have an enormous will to numinosity and, like, love and appreciation for the world as it is. I'm blown away, Carolyn. Your self-knowledge is really just... And it is like a giant cock vulva of, like, generous, penetrating, juicy, yeah, love. Like, what else comes from a cock vulva situation, yoni lingam extravaganza?
Thank you,
Cosmic
Layla.
Hermaphrodite.
I'm so happy that you agree with my self-assessment.
I'm just jealous that I didn't see it more clearly myself.
Well, to be fair, I have dreams of giant cock vulvas, just like giant ejaculating, spasming, birthing things. So I'm like, yeah, that's what's going on. I can see that. And so include me in.
Yeah.
Well, but it is just like, I think about how a lot of people, very beautiful, tender hearts, very compassionate, well-intentioned, just want to have that will to numinosity.
Right.
They just want to, you know, love and forgive and ascend. Right. And they don't want to hurt anybody. No. They don't want to take, so, which means, and if you don't want to hurt anybody ever, especially if you define hurt as offending even, you cannot exist in the world. You cannot, like, have that base chakra, like, oomph.
Right.
Like, where you land and you make money and you get your hands bloody and dirty with the filth of the marketplace. And you know.
The way you're talking about this. It's really turning me on. Well, it's what people need to understand.
Understand because it's, you know, I have seen the best minds of my generation, like, destroy themselves. Uselessly, pointlessly, like keeping themselves in these little confined, you know, like, and it harm, do, what is that saying? The way the Wiccans do it, and it harm none, do what thou wilt.
Right.
And
right.
It's like, yeah, but if you breathe, you're harming the micro Right. That are like, you right. cannot. And so,
right. Like, there is an inherent harm that is included in the great wholeness.
That's why it's just do what thou wilt, everybody. In case you've ever been fooled by some Wiccan nonsense, Gerald Gardner did not know what the fuck he was on about. He was literally just cribbing notes from Aleister Crowley. So the original version is just do what thou wilt is the whole of the law. Love is the law. Love under will. And, you know, so that's the truth. And you have to do that. And you, and it's so when you do that, your will to numinosity, what I'm just telling you from personal experience, what Layla is kindly co-signing for me, is that your will to numinosity becomes way more powerful, creates way more actual beauty and bounty in the world. And it doesn't... there's a lot of flaccid spiritual people.
There's a lot of flaccid dryness in the spiritual world. It's true. Well, and I was just thinking about how, like, you, like, the will to numinosity is both, like, a creative act of, like, actually doing things that make the world more beautiful and create more abundance and generosity. And also the will to numinosity,
Okay. Sorry, we got interrupted there. I'm not sure. We don't know where we got cut off.
Well, I think we got cut off where we were talking about the will to numinosity as not... I was saying something along the lines of, it is not only a, like, generative will to numinosity, but it is, like, a will to, like, perception of the, like, numinous beauty of what is. Mm-hmm. And I think it's completely impossible to have an overflowing, turgid, juicy perception of numinosity if you can't deal with the will to domination or the will to escape. Like, if you find either of them, like, yucky and objectionable, of course you're not going to be able to, like, perceive the numinous interplay of all things in manifest reality, you know?
Yeah, I really like that you use the word turgid, because to me that's really a D.H. Lawrence kind of word, and I really like D.H. Lawrence. He wrote Lady Chatterley's Lover. He was a fun, erotic writer. And D.H. Lawrence said the only aristocracy is the aristocracy of consciousness. And I feel like D.H. Lawrence just knew what was up. But he would really agree with you there, Layla. Yeah. He would agree with us.
He would agree with us.
Everything we're saying.
So we got that going for us.
We do. And yeah, it's true, which is, you know, and so you were talking earlier to me about how, like, from the pessimistic, Gnostic, ascetic point of view of, like, this is a prison planet, this, we gotta get out of here.
Yeah, this is a horrible world. This world is to be, like, not to be trusted. We've gotta, like, see our way through the, like, evil tricks of the world. Like, the world is the enemy. We have to, like, recede from it as much as possible. Eat only rice.
Definitely.
Yes. Eat only rice. Wear only burlap sacks. Never masturbate or enjoy fornications of any kind. That Babylon is a way more exciting character, because I feel like the ascetic Gnosticism is, of course, like, I mean, it, the shorthand is, it's the will to escape gone completely fucking crazy. And it sounds like you might get somewhere with it, you know? People do have, like, potent religious experiences on that path, but, like, it can't be true, because the reason that they're there having that experience is because somebody else was, like, fornicating and having a good time. So it just doesn't, I don't know, like, somehow.
It's not holistic enough, and it doesn't, I really like how Formscapes do it. I'm going to have to find this video and, like, mention it in the description, hopefully, is that he talks about how both the will to escape and the will to dominate cannot be the foundational logos of the world.
Exactly.
Because they do not require a world. Because, like, if the only point is to escape, then why create a world in the first place?
Right. The telos of God can't be to escape, because then God would never have imprisoned God's self. It doesn't make sense.
It makes zero sense.
It's, like, weird that you would have, like, an escape room be the, like, metaphysical truth of reality. Like,
yes. It doesn't... work. Which is why Gnostic, like, those pessimistic Gnostic myths always get so weird, because they're always like, everything was perfect and beautiful, and then something went all wrong! Something went horribly wrong! This lie happened, this prison was created! Yeah. I was like, what? Oh, okay. But anyways, so there's that, and then there's, the will to dominate. Also, this cannot be the telos of the whole universe, because if you just want to completely fucking control everything,
don't create
anything at all. You'll maintain perfect control if it's right. Just not.
Right. For sure.
So clearly the creator is not into, like, total domination and not into escape. Clearly there's something else. So that, I guess we probably talked about this in the last podcast we did, but it's just so important, why not talk about it again, is that, like, the fundamental difference between both the will to domination and the will to escape and the will to numinosity is that those two pillars are seeing the other as antagonist. Which is true, always true, to a certain extent, but to a limited extent, not to an absolute extent,
right?
Like, there are people that, whatever I'm competing against in the marketplace, they are antagonists. If I get lost in the forest, you know, nature red and in tooth and claw will probably destroy me pretty quickly because I don't have any Tom Brown survival skills. So it will antagonize me. Okay, yes. But it cannot be true in the absolute sense. It just can't be. Like, on an absolute level, the other is loving, because the other is the precondition of my existence in this world at all. So that in itself is love. Like you said, there was fucking that precipitated me even being able to have the wonderful fun of transcending the prison of matter, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So
you didn't get here by transcendence being already the case. So that can't be the, like, universal truth. It can't be the bedrock.
Mm-hmm.
And just brings me back to, like, how that's such a wonderful, like, the symbol of Babylon riding the beast is such a wonderful symbol of that, because, like, it's not Babylon slaying the beast. It's Babylon, like, majestically, triumphantly riding the beast, and the beast isn't transformed into, like, a gentle lamb or, like, a unicorn or even, like, a normally attractive lion. It's like a hideous and terrible beast that just is the way that it is, and still, like, Babylon triumphantly rides it in all of her slutty allowance and compassion. And I don't know. That just inspires me.
It's true. Extremely inspirational. I was thinking that maybe, like, a gateway drug to appreciating the full beauty of that image could be, for some folks, the Rider-Waite image of the Strength tarot card, which is a nice, chaste-looking lady
in a white robe,
holding open the mouth of a very conventionally handsome lion.
A Calvin Klein line model.
And the implication is, of course, that she has tamed the lion, this beastly strength, this ferocious force, through her chaste and gentle, loving presence.
Right. Her innocence just diffuses the ravenousness of the lion. It couldn't harm her. Because why would it want to? She's so sweet and beautiful.
Yeah. And it's like he's in her loving vibrational field. So he's just going to let her be the boss. And, you know,
right.
It's kind of, so it's amazing. So that in itself is a teaching about, like, okay, true strength is this gentleness that can overcome all ferocity, right? So And then Aleister Crowley was like, great. You know what strength really is? It's lust. And let's illustrate that.
Yeah.
So then if you look at the Thoth deck, you see exactly what we've been talking about, which is the image of Babylon riding the beast.
Yeah, the more fully translated, advanced version.
Yes.
Yeah, and there's, like, an ecstasy, and, like, and I think that's just, you know, the true tantra. The whole thing seems to exist for pleasure on some level, and excitement, and titillation, and so I do think that lust is just a better transmission, because I do think that lust energy, like, that word has more to do with more things than maybe just like love. Mm-hmm. I think love sometimes feels a little like
treacly. You know,
it's a little treacly. It's like Blue Mary in her like holding the baby Jesus, not like whore, virgin whore mother Babylon, like give it to me. Impregnate me with the seed of the Lord God. You know,
like the real Mary. Yeah. The real, like what was really going on when the angel came to call, you know what I'm saying?
Just insane, you know, just like very turned on.
Yeah, totally. Which is funny because I was just thinking about how like the Typhonian order of Kenneth Grant, which is like one of the weirdest esoteric orders on the planet and is a version of Thelema, just very prominently features the dove. And I guess the other seals of Thelema feature the descending dove, of which in conventional Christianity is the Holy Spirit. But they understand the dove as, you know, a symbol of Babylon and a symbol of this.
Yeah, grace of the great whore.
Exactly, exactly. So, which is also funny to me because just a little fun, little precognition. When I was in college, I really used to fantasize a lot about being in a 1950s style girl gang called the Bloody Doves. And I would draw pictures of this in my notebook and make little collages, and it was all I really wanted. And I feel like I truly have that these days with you and Lucy and Lisa and everybody, like Danny, shout out Holly, all the wonderful ladies
of the Psalms faculty.
Of the Psalms faculty.
The Bloody Doves.
The Bloody Doves.
Yeah, I do feel like that's what we're trying to do here, Carolyn, is bring down the grace of like, what if you were just way more whorishness. Brought way more whorishness to your, like, consciousness.
I mean, every single woman I've ever met, I don't know about men, maybe, but I'm sure deep down they're all good too. But every single woman I've ever met has had such a tender, compassionate heart. Lord, they're already saints. Every single woman is already a saint. And sure, she might be a complete asshole too, but like the saintly heart is already there. And I feel like it just needs permission to coexist along with the assholery and in full. And to become, I don't know, I guess I just noticed with being around women is that the more they give themselves permission to be that, you know, nature red in tooth and claw and have that ferocity, the more they thrive and the more their compassionate hearts can be effective in the world.
That's true.
I've seen it with you, Layla.
Oh, thank you.
It's been glorious.
Thank you.
It's been a glorious transformation to witness.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I feel like I was always kind of mean. No, that's not true. Anyway, whatever. We don't need to talk about it. Yeah, I just really appreciate the perspective that the world is lovable and to be loved even in its shittiness, much more than it is a trick to be seen through.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's
yeah, that's what I get. And from the well, so world. And what I love about so like to sort of tie this all in with battle magic, which you can buy today for one payment of $500 or six low payments of $99 a month, less than what you're probably spending on DoorDash and Uber Eats, my friends, you can participate in this wonderful course where we're doing deep work on shadow recollection and a profound level of restorative theurgy that just, you know, brings this magnificent balance into the world, into our lives. And anyways, shadow recollection work, I feel like, is what gave me the ability to begin to do this, to begin to have an actually empowered will to numinosity. And I guess I was thinking about this with you too, Layla, and we were talking about it recently with folks in Sleepover Mystery School, which is that this oftentimes spiritual folks want to do some sort of work that involves their talents, their compassion, their actual thing, and they are very afraid of being seen as a con person, a charlatan, an exploitative cult leader, creep. And all of my happiness in life has come from just agreeing to that. I mean, like, okay, yep. You are whoever you are out there, you are entirely welcome to see me as an utterly exploitative con man, creep, cult leader, liar, charlatan, whatever you want. And I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing and you can pay me. Come on in. And it's really good. And because, and as long as I was afraid of that
perception,
which, and as long as I was being afraid of receiving that projection from people, and as long as I was afraid of that actual vibration in my psyche, which was like, fuck yeah, I'll, you know, there was, I could feel there was a part of me that would be like willing, that was willing to prostitute myself in a not cool, unconscious way, that was willing to be a people pleaser, that was willing to, like, you know, I could feel that in myself. And it, what was funny is that that shadow was operative when I didn't approve of it. I mean, that's the thing with unconscious contents is they are fully operative when you are not agreeing to them consciously. So, like, I was like, I'm just trying to be a good person.
Right, there's no level of denial that actually saves you from doing the thing that you're afraid of.
Yeah.
You just don't even recognize that you're doing it.
Exactly. Meanwhile, I was conning people left and right with my weird, people-pleasing, sickly, sweet, love and light bullshit. And I was poor. So, like, really, it's just sucked all around. It was completely pointless. And then a deep level of creative energy and, you know, everything... Yeah, I mean, creative energy, like life force vitality became available to me when I was like, actually, I see this shadowy thing and I'm willing to like be like, yes, that exists. That's a part of me. You are welcome to see that in me. You are, I'm definitely capable of acting in that way if I'm not, you know, like I'm aware that I could behave in an exploitative way with the members of my mystery culture if that occurred to me. Like, I could be like, yes, why, yes, you could have sex with me for special teachings or whatever, which is like, right, the oldest trick in the book and would totally work. Would totally work on a number of very fine people who I just decide not to do that to. But it's not as if there's zero part of me that would like to have
adoring adepts.
Sex with adepts. It's not as if that doesn't exist within me. It's not as if, like,
you couldn't even fathom
how anybody could do such a thing. Like, I understand quite well what the allure of that is. And, anyways, so it's so consciously accepting, like, that is a part of me. The part that could choose to do that is completely present, and that monstrous will to dominate, will to exploit, completely there. And I'm just not going to exert it, and I'm not going to pretend like it doesn't exist. Like, if it comes up, I'm going to talk to my trusted spiritual support system so they can be like, no, Carolyn, don't do that. And I can be like, great, thank you for reminding me that I need to not do that.
Yeah.
So, anyways, all of which is to say, it's by recollecting that part of the shadow, I gained a lot of creativity and a lot of joy and a lot of ability to be honest and to not be people-pleasing and to not be leaking sexual energy outside of my monogamous commitments and to not just to not do the fucked up shit. But still, people see me. I cannot control.
Well, you cannot control people's projections.
Right.
You can only have a good awareness of self to say, that seems to be your own shadow that you are tilting at over here. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty clear that that's not what's actually going on.
No. I do want to... So anyways, so I'm pretty at peace with allowing people to project whatever they want onto me. But I was reading Marie-Louise von Franz, and she was talking about how... Sorry, I was reading Marie-Louise von Franz, and she was talking about how projections do have a negative impact on the people who receive the projections, which I think is quite obvious. Like, you look at any Hollywood star, right, and how crazy they go, and they're receiving all so much projection, right, from so many people. Mm-hmm. And I had this interesting thing where, like, oh my God, my back and my neck was, like, really hurting so, so much. And I could not figure it out. I was, like, getting multiple massages a week and going to chiropractors and doing relaxation and stretches and all of this stuff. And it wasn't until I, like, tuned in and was really looking for, like, what were the representations there? And I saw that I had, like, psychic representations of, like, voices saying mean things. So it wasn't images, but it was, like, my muscles were, like, reacting and tensing up against, like, voices that, you know, like, as critical, like, as if other people were criticizing me. And my muscles, so those were, like, a mental representation outside of my conscious awareness until I really searched for it and tuned into it. And once I changed that representation using the tools that I've learned from Dr. Robert, completely went away. The pain, the tension, utterly gone. So I'm really grateful for that. But it got me thinking. I'm like, and I was just like, okay, so it could have been something that I entirely generated in my own psyche, sure. And also pretty sure there's some bitches I used to be friends with who are out there talking shit about me. Love you. Hope you get everything you want and need. But I was like, yeah, they, like, anyways, I was just feeling the truth of Marie-Louise von Franz's statement, which is, like, that's why people were afraid of the evil eye. And right. That's, the whole Mediterranean was really on guard about the evil eye, because they recognized that you can, with your malevolent thoughts, like, create actual negative effects for other people that will hurt them. And, yeah, so it's just a deep thing to think about. So anyways, that's another reason to put effort into recollecting one's own projections, which, by the way, you 1,000% are doing them. All humans project shit. We completely do it all day long. And it drains us of our own creative energy. It drains us of our own self-knowledge. It drains us from, really, from being in the position to take full responsibility for our power and exercise it in the world.
You know what this is making me think, Carolyn?
What?
On the topic of battle magic. I hope I can explain this, because it just sort of flashed into my mind. That this shadow projection of, like, evil and wrong, that it's, like, totally legit to do. Every sphere of people has another group of people that it's completely okay to just, like, talk shit and hate on them and think they're awful.
You know who I don't like? Those dirty materialists.
Yeah.
That's who I don't like.
Exactly. That's who you find it completely okay to just hate on and, yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. So pretty much every group of people, every ideological thought bubble universe has a, you know, group of others that it's totally okay to project hate onto. But some ideological thought bubbles are deeply harmed by the projection of evil onto them. And some ideological thought bubbles have evolved the capacity to be fed and nourished by evil being projected onto them, and they actually grow stronger the more that other groups hate them and revile them and think they're evil and try to take them down and put all of the world's they're essentially like, when you are like, I'm a good and virtuous person, not like that evil group over there. There are some groups that are like, yes,
they breathe that in.
Give me your evil. Yeah. I want to be associated with evil. That makes me stronger and more dominating. And so one of the most powerful things we can possibly do to diminish the power of those ideological thought bubbles is to stop projecting evil onto them, because they are like growing because of that.
Oh, so well said. Brilliantly well said. Yeah, I really, and even you were talking about them as thought bubbles, I was really seeing the torus form, you know, which is like the most stable, dynamically moving shape. And like the way that they're sort of these like epic kind of vampiric Tauruses, I guess you could say, or like predatory. They're sort of what, yeah, I know what you mean. They're what I think like Carlos Castaneda would call like, anyways, I don't need to get into all that weird
shamanic
stuff. You
just know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about. And I know that like, yeah, the more that people hate and fear them and, you know, cast, they are definitely energized by that and strengthened by it. So it's an act of battle magic to be like, I'm not going to villainize you. Anyway, that's what I started talking about, oh yeah, that was the tip I was on. Talking about not perceiving an absolute antagonist. Mm-hmm. Like, just knowing that the adversary is just another archetype. The adversary is necessary. The proper response to the adversary is to ride the adversary. Like, embrace the adversarial energy and be grateful for it. To, like, love thine enemies is the generative response to adversarial energy, not the like the fearful, shaming, blaming response, because that can totally just energize plenty of those forms.
It's also making me think about how like there are thought bubbles that like there are toruses of ideology or whatever that thrive by like completely outsourcing all perception of evil and are like sucking up, I don't know, like that are largely projective and that cast themselves totally as good and the evil elsewhere, and then the evil ones are only too happy, I mean whatever, these are relative terms, but are only too happy to like suck up all the like evil that's being expelled from the like super good ones and like becoming stronger and stronger. Anyway, I can see very clearly how all the forces of imbalance are fed by the fact that like we're like, I gotta outsource. I can't be associated with this evil. It's gotta go somewhere. And someone else is like, great, I need it. That's my power. Amazing. And yeah, just being willing to be like, you know what, actually, I'll just take responsibility for my own human-sized lot of evil. And that's mine. I don't need it to be somewhere else. I don't need you to carry it for me. I can just comfortably be associated with my own regular mortal human amount of evil.
I love it.
Is like, then there's no surplus to be found anywhere, because we're all carrying our full weight and no one destroys the world.
You're really getting to the heart of what it is. And it's also like there's, and so that attitude, that basic sanity, what that attitude does, and I think the reason why I was very slow to want to come to it, and why most people in their lifetimes never get to that attitude at all, of like, I will take responsibility for my portion of evil here, I will suffer its consequences, I will know that it is there, I will be on the lookout to try to responsibly manage its impact, whatever. The reason why most people don't take that like humble, related, human level of responsibility is because it means deflating their unconscious archetypal identification with how do I say, basically with the self itself. Mm. So like when one starts, so how do I, it's still difficult for me to explain because I kind of get this intuitively, but I haven't spent a lot of time putting it into words. And there's a wonderful book called Ego and Archetype by Edward Ettinger that goes deep into this. But basically Ettinger talks about how we're all born in a state of total inflated identity with the archetype of the self, in the sense that, you know, every baby is the sun of their universe, and it should be so. They experience themselves as the center of everything, and they don't know that they are conscious, they don't know that other people are conscious. They have to develop a unique, individuated consciousness. If you sort of remain in that unconscious identification with the self, you're sort of remaining, basically, like, if you don't individuate, if you don't come into proper human relationship with the archetypes of, you know, the adversary, the sun, the, you know, everything, you're sort of just riding whatever is in the collective unconscious of whatever is closest to you. So, you know, your family, your culture, your news media. You're just basically kind of like an automaton being run by those programs. And you're not, which is very, like, comfortable. It's very, there's a lot of certainty and reassurance and affirmation in it. There's a lot of material benefit in it, because as long as you're agreeing with your family and your news media and your religious group,
you're ripe for advancement.
Yes, and as long as you are agreeing with them about who the evil other is and who, you know, you are cozy and you're just like bobbing along in this, like,
yeah, it's frictionless.
Yes.
There's no friction between you and other, because you kind of aren't other than other.
Exactly. Yeah. So you get to stay in sort of like this baby-esque condition of not being responsible for your own shit.
Right.
And of just imagining that other people elsewhere are responsible for your shit. So deciding not to do that, deciding to recognize, like, oh, wow, there is a portion of evil in me, and it doesn't mean I need to, like, pull out my hair and, you know, berate myself. It's just, every human has this as part of their fractal holographic inheritance. This is mine. And also, by the way, I also have this glowing star-like wonderfulness in me, just as literally every other human being does.
Right.
So, like, recognizing that and, like, recognizing, like, wow, this wonderfulness is not something foreign that belongs to somebody else. This terribleness is not something completely foreign that only belongs to somebody else. I have a portion of each of these, and I need to, relate to the world as honestly and as equanimously as I can, instead of through these, like, really, like, vast, distorted, imbalanced views which the archetypal possessions create. I don't know, I'm probably still doing a bad job of putting it into words, but that's so much of what this work entails, is being willing to, And Edward Ettinger talks about, and this is, I find this very connected to the work that you do in your Forbidden Fruit coaching container, Layla, because it's about, he says that what, you know, pretty much everybody needs to do, and many people avoid doing, is they need to do something that is completely taboo from their socialization.
Right.
So, like, not, you know, which could be literally something of, like, I'm going to say what I actually think on Instagram.
Or to my mom.
I'm going to, right, you know, go out with my boyfriend and wear this dress or whatever. It could be literally anything. It could be, I'm going to start my own business. It could be, I'm going to make art. Whatever. But it needs to be something that, like, the person, they perceive it as, like, oh, no.
I could never do that.
If I do that.
I need to actually make money.
Right. Like, that's usually, like, one of the first level excuses. Or, like, if I do that, like, what would my mom think of me? Or what would my Aunt Jenny think? Or what would Bruce, my cousin, I don't know.
Yeah, like, totally. Like, totally.
And you need to do whatever that taboo thing is in order to realize, in order to accomplish just the first steps into individuation. Because there's no way that you begin your individuation while completely complying with the conditioning that you've been handed. That just ain't what it is.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, my shorthand for it is that, like, everyone knows that being possessed by a demon is bad news. But it's equally bad news for your evolution as an individuated person to be possessed by angels. And so if everyone around you is just constantly, like, so happy with you and just, like, never has anything wrong with you, chances are you are possessed by angels and you're not really being you at all. You're living in that baby-like, frictionless, essentially immature state.
Wildly dishonest. It cannot be true.
And then, you know, thinking about this in the light, you know, circling back to the thing we were talking about before, like, if you are completely associated with the angelic goodness, then you inherently must be projecting the demonic badness elsewhere, and someone's doing something with that and accumulating it and, like, forging it into power. And you cannot pretend that you're not supplying that by your own complete attachment to your angelic goodness and innocence.
Yes, exactly.
The debts have to be paid. Like, you know, you're...
That's a great way of putting it into words. Yeah. Absolutely. You are literally giving your power away. You are giving away your inheritance as a, you know, sublime little fractal of God and trying to pretend like you ain't the whole thing, like you're only
right,
some little part. Anyways, yeah, it's deep. It goes deep. So that's what we're doing that's what I'm doing in Battle Magic is I'm saying to folks, hey, come on, I'll show you what I know about re-owning, recollecting these projected parts of ourself. And, this is a fun thing. It's like it's very nice. People say very nice things to me about, like, my skin and how young I look and how beautiful I am. Thank you, everybody who says that. I completely agree. And it comes from, I really truly know this, and I really think that I should be able to find a beauty sponsor for this. I think it's the Lord. That by when one truly eats these demons and angels, like, recollects these projections, it improves the glandular function, it improves the blood flow, it boosts human growth hormone, it boosts collagen production. Basically, I'm trying to tell you.
Basically, the appeal to vanity.
It's a beauty course, okay? It's better than any, whatever. You know, you pay for things to look more beautiful. You go get manicures, you get your hair done, you go to the gym.
Supplements.
I'm saying powders. This will do a lot for you, okay?
It's listeners true.
At home, you will look younger, you will look brighter, you will have more vim and verve. Buy Battle Magic.
It's not even untrue.
It's not untrue.
I know.
Layla knows that I'm not even fucking lying.
I know. That's the thing that's making me laugh the most about it. Because it sounds so
literally, I'm pretty sure you were there the one day where, like, I came downstairs. Maybe you were there. Maybe I'm just imagining that you were there. David was definitely there. I came downstairs after I had just done this deep working to, like, eat this, like, demon of alienation that was within me.
Yeah.
And I came downstairs and, like, everybody was like, wow, Carolyn, you look great.
Yeah.
And I was like, I just integrated a demon and it really lights me up.
Guess what? Maybe. I love it, Carolyn. Buy Battle Magic. You heard it here, folks. You will be beautiful and also wise.
Exactly. Exactly. That's how we do it. Okay, thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. And yeah, Battle Magic will be open for registration just until tomorrow night. So it's Thursday today when this is going to come out.
Today's Thursday.
Tomorrow will be Friday. Closes midnight on Friday Eastern time. So if you're listening to this after Battle Magic has closed, I'm sorry for your loss. But you can stay tuned for other offerings from the Immortal College. Stay tuned for more podcast episodes. And thank you so much for tuning in. You are the coolest people. That is no lie. Tell your friends, keep posting ratings and reviews and sharing us. That really, really helps get the bizarre, magical, integrative word out there.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.